Welcome. We're getting ready to begin our third session.
About this in the country.
I would like to introduce to you Pastor Phil and Pastor Denise Anderson. We met via email just at the right opportune time, and we're able to set all this up, which is wonderful to have you. They are from Cactus Nazarene Ministry Center, and you probably got to meet them downstairs. Thank you guys for going to the mission market and all that. So let's hear from Pastor Phil, I believe is first up.
Maybe so. Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm always feel privileged to get the after lunch group. Hopefully you grabbed your coffee and are ready to stay awake. But I can tell you this, if I bore you and if two-thirds of us go to sleep, that's the vote. We all go down and listen to Dan Boone, okay? That's what we do, all right? So that's how we'll start. I'm Phil Anderson, and I'm the director of Cactus Nazarene Ministries in Cactus, Texas. And I'll just give you a quick synopsis of Cactus, Texas itself. It's kind of an innocuous place. It's in the northwest panhandle of Texas. If you're familiar with your geography, that means it's in the very far northwest corner of the little square part of Texas. That's the panhandle. I don't think Texas looks much like a pan, but at least has a handle, right? So we joined the Oklahoma panhandle. We're as far from the Mexico border as you can get in Texas. We're almost 10 hours away from the Mexico border. We're 30 minutes from Oklahoma and 30 minutes from New Mexico, and an hour and a half only from Colorado. So we're quite a ways up there. We are in what used to be the plains of America. So there are sections there that if you drive out about 20 minutes from our little town, it would look like it did 300 years ago, minus the buffalo. Although even those are coming back and being reintroduced into the grassland. It's a beautiful place. It is a agricultural area, mostly industrial farms and beef packing plants. So Cactus is surrounded by dairies. And when I say industrial, these dairies milk over 100,000 head of cows every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They're massive places. We have 22,000 people in the county of Moore County. We're outnumbered easily 5,000 to 1 by cows. So the head of cattle there are well into the millions in this county in Texas. Cactus is a little town of about 3,500 people, 98% of them whom are refugees and immigrants and asylees from between 25 and 35 different countries all around the world. The majority of the white people that are there, you're looking at. So that's the truth of Cactus. Cactus Nazarene Ministry Center was started as a compassionate ministry to work with the people who are refugees and immigrants to help them to live a better life in the United States. It's morphed from compassionate ministries. It's still a compassionate ministry, but more than just compassionate ministries, but also into community development. And so that's the ministry center we are at. We teach ESL. We have GED or high school equivalency preparatory classes. We do pastoral counseling. We have after school programs called BLAST. Building Lives Around Sound Truth is what BLAST stands for. We have the Teenage BLAST. We have assimilation classes. I don't really like the word assimilation, but classes to help people understand budgeting and banking and doing all the things in the United States. Credit cards. Because many of them work in the beef packing plant, they get a credit card, don't know what it is, find out that it comes right out of their paycheck, and they don't get a paycheck, and then they're, you know, destitute. And so just helping people to understand the life here.
And immigration.
I was getting there. And one of the major things, she's the head of this, so she wants to make sure this happens. Immigration is one of the major ministries that we do. We're Department of Justice recognized, and Denise, my wife, is accredited with the Department of Justice to do legal immigration services. We're one of two, Catholic Charities being the other, in the entire panhandle of Texas. And so there are a lot of people to go around, and that keeps us busy. What that means is we help people with their green cards, either receiving a green card, keeping their green cards up to date, moving towards citizenship, specialty visas, family reunification, all kinds of things, both with immigrants, asylees, and refugees. And so it's a huge part of the ministry. So today, we maybe not talk just specifically about Cactus, but with Cactus Ministries in mind, I just wanted to say that what we're going to really talk about is why the church needs to, keeping with the theme of this whole conference, is to refocus and serve. And a big part of that is of what has happened over the last couple of years. This is a picture of our family. This is my two daughters and their husbands here, our adopted daughter and her newly, I guess, permanent child. She just received her in the courts permanently. Sad situation with this little girl's mom and drugs and just not wanting to get out of that life. And so it's difficult. And my favorite grandson right there. So, and we're actually waiting at any moment for this girl to call us and say, the baby's coming now. And so we have a 3.5 hour drive ahead of us possibly tonight. And both my daughters are actually pregnant this summer. So we're excited to be grandparents to two baby girls coming this year, so very, very fun. But anyway, we wanted to talk about, it's slow. There we go.
Can I sit back there?
I just got to hit it a couple of times. So in the last couple of years, you know, we've had this pandemic. Anybody ever hear about that? it's kind of been in the news now and then. You know, you hear about it and all this stuff.
What is this pandemic?
The problem with the pandemic is that it really impacted the church. And it impacted most everything that the church has normally done. And I say normally done. And it's a generalized statement because not every church was impacted as hard as others were impacted. But if you go to any of the statistics and look up the stuff that was going on, Barna, if you don't know, Barna Group is an organization that does surveys and stuff and looks at churches and the life of Christianity in the United States and sees what's going on and figures things out for us. And it's sometimes really helpful and sometimes it's really sad. But 30 to 50% lower in-person church services since the 2020 pandemic. 50% is huge for some churches, especially if there's only 10 people in a church, right? And so it's caused all kinds of problems. In-church attendance took the hit, and what happens when people aren't in church is that outreach ministries also stop. And in fact, that's really been a huge part of what the pandemic has done, is got the church from being outside of its walls in some ways, and in other ways, even more so outside of its walls. So we've gone online, which gets us out of its walls, but it doesn't do outreach in the same way. We don't have the personal touch online that we can do as a church when we meet face to face. And we're going to talk about this later, but church is literally the practice for going out and doing what we're supposed to be doing, right? What we're called to do. And we have a lot of scripture that kind of backs that up. So that's what we want to talk about. So here we are in Cactus. Cactus is part of the Church of the Nazarene. It's an outreach service of the Church of the Nazarene. That's one way of doing things, one thing that we can do, but there are so many things that the church can do. So What does that really look like? And I'm going to try and follow along on my own thing here, but maybe I should do this instead. So we're still in the pandemic. According to the news, it's just going to get worse again. And I think all of us have said, so what are you going to do about it, right? But now's a great time then, as things are kind of slow, to really look at that, to refocus and more deeply understand why we do outreach. If we see that the church is struggling and people aren't coming in, part of it is because we've made it easy for them not to come by doing online, and it's great. And there are some wonderful stories of people coming to know Christ and churches actually growing in who is hearing the sermons and being part of the worship, being online and all of that. But it has really impacted our outreach in the personal way. So maybe now is a real time to understand why we do that. It really should be part of our DNA. Outreach is who we are as Christians. good works, as you can see in Ephesians 2:10 and Matthew 5:16, and good deeds is the underlying impetus of Christianity. James talks about that. In fact, he says, works without faith is dead, and faith without works is dead. They go hand in hand. You can't do one without the other. And when we say works, you'll say, well, I know a lot of Christians or non-Christians who do really good works. Yes, they do. But the impetus of that is that the works lead to salvation, right? And salvation leads to hope and life and eternity. And that's the difference between the non-Christian works and the Christian works. We're not doing it because we think you deserve it to be done for, but because we desire to see you with us in heaven. That's really the impetus of that. That there's hope and life in Christ Jesus for all people, as Dan Boone has been talking about. All people. And so outreach is a huge part of doing that. We can't do good works if we're stuck in our buildings only doing buildings. We can't do good works if we're only watching a service online in our pajamas from the couch. Outreach is the impetus of the Christian life. It really has to happen in order to do that. And what it says here, then it glorifies your Father in heaven. It's interesting that these scriptures don't say your worship and your praise, which do also glorify God, but they're the practice of the good deeds and the good works, which then they will glorify God in heaven. A big difference. Those folks that we do outreach for glorifies God. That's so huge and important. I love this poem from Teresa. I don't know if it's Avila or Avila or Avila. Avila. There you go. Got to look at that emphasis right there. That's how you know. Avila. All right. So Christ has no body but yours. No hands. No feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes through which he looks compassionately on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands through which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands. Yours are the feet. Yours are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. So what does this tell us about being followers of Christ? This is your chance to shine. What does this really tell us? Anybody?
We need to stop sitting still.
We need to stop sitting still. There's nothing about being feet that tells us we're sitting still, right? God didn't make our feet to sit on. That's uncomfortable. Plus, I can't get my legs up that far anyway. What else? What does it tell us about me? Yeah, we say it a lot, don't we? We need to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ. But what does that really mean to us as Christians? So how does this relate to the scriptures we just read in Matthew and Ephesians? Good works and good deeds. Well, if we sit on our feet and we sit on our hands, we can't do either one of those. So our words are one thing, but our deeds are another.
Mm-hmm. This shows that if Christ has no body but ours, then all the good deeds we do come from God.
Yeah, that's a huge part of it. All the good things we do come through the Spirit of God living in us, don't they? It's called giving the Spirit of God reign in our life to do what He's called us to do. There's nothing in Scriptures that tell us to sit down and do nothing. Always, in fact, is in Matthew, the last Matthew, go into all the world and preach the gospel, right? Baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them all of these things which I've commanded you. To go be the hands and feet, to be Jesus in all of this. I switch it here, and then I got to remember to switch it there. So as we refocus, as we think about where we are in outreach and what we're doing, we can look at Mark and we see that the Son of Man, or Jesus, didn't come to be served, right? He could have. He could have just said, yep, I'm the king. Could have done what people thought he was going to do. He could have vanquished the Roman foe. He could have set up his kingdom here on earth. He could have done all of that. But he didn't come to be served. He actually came to serve. And he gave his life as a ransom for many, right? Just as the Lord came to earth to serve others, we are most like him when we have a heart of service. That's a powerful verse that's easy for us to skip over, and it's been really hard in light of the way church has had to operate in the last couple of years to think about that we're most like Christ, which is another thing that we say in church all the time. Oh, just be like Jesus. I just want to be like Jesus. And we go to the altar all the time, Lord, make me like him. And he's saying, well, get out there and do something, and that's how you become like me. A real close friend of ours one time gave a sermon and said, if you want to see heaven come now, if you want to see eternity tomorrow, if you want to see Jesus coming on a cloud, go tell them somebody about him. Go serve them and show them who Jesus is. That's how you get Jesus to come. Because the sooner we get everybody preached to, the sooner we show people the love of Jesus, the sooner people recognize that Jesus is the Son of God, the faster he comes. That should be motivation for us. But this is motivation too. This is who we are. The scriptures tell us right there, you want to be like Jesus? Go out and serve. Outreach is the main impetus of our church. Do you ever find that the more you don't go to church, the easier it is to not go to church? Do you ever realize the fact that if you've not done any kind of outreach service, you probably never will? And that's a huge, ugly statistic. It's, or we do it begrudgingly, or we do it because somebody's idea is out there and we just feel like we have to. We're obligated. Obligated is a tough word for me, because I feel obligated a lot of times to do certain things, and it's a good obligation. But I also feel obligated to do some things, and it's not a good obligation. I don't really want to do this, or I do it because I'm obligated in not such a good way. But if we feel obligated in not such a good way to go do service, then we don't have the heart of Christ. But if we feel obligated because Jesus commands us in a way, actually, he does, not in a way, period, Matthew 29 again, then we're obligated to go out and serve. And if we want to be like Jesus, that's what we do. It's hard to go do this. It's hard to think about service because it takes the time that we want for ourselves. And I know that for a fact, that living in Cactus and the Super Bowl comes on and somebody comes in needing something, or unbeknownst to me, somebody on my staff plans some kind of outreach on Super Bowl night. You know, what were you thinking? Come on. But that's the truth of it. We decide there are things more important to us as a church, as a people, as an individual, than service to others. Yet right here, Mark tells us that's how we're like Jesus. Jesus definitely took some time off. So I'm not telling you can't ever take time off and watch the Super Bowl or go to your kids' games or whatever it is. But this is the impetus of the Christian life, the service to others and as we live. So here's a question I have for you. So you've heard about Cactus a little bit, but the question I have is, what are some broad categories of outreach ministries? Because here's the thing that can galvanize you into inactivity is, what do we do? There's so much that we can do. And so I just wanted to hear what some of your ideas of broad categories of outreach are there. There are very specific things, obviously, but what's a broad category of outreach? What do we do as a church that would be outreach to our community? Just throw some out there.
We do a nursing home service.
Good. Nursing home service.
Vacation Bible School.
Vacation Bible School. Is that outreach or inreach? Just checking.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. We do Vacation Bible School too. Somebody.
Food outreach.
Food
to families that need it.
Sure, families who need it. It's a great thing. How many of us do food outreach and say, "Here's your food," but we never actually talk to anybody? here's the other part of all of these possible outreaches, and I know we could spend all afternoon talking about the different types of outreaches and what we do is, but do we really use them? What is outreach? We can do this, and I'll use the food thing as an example because it's the easiest to have a line and people pack their groceries, and I've seen this over and over and over again. Come and, oh, here's your canned goods. Here, listen, we've got rice for you today. Here's your bag of beans. Here's some vegetables. Here's some fruit. Listen, we've got frozen chicken patties for you, and I'm talking about one of the things we do in Cactus over the summertime in a partnership we have with Snack Pack for Kids when they bring a semi-load of boxes of food and we hand them the food as fast as we can get it out of the back of the semi. But we don't take the time to talk to people about why we're giving them the food or what their problem in the life, the issue is in their life right now, that they have to come and get food. And how do we walk beside them in that instead of just handing it to them? So outreach is exactly that. Not just to go do something that's easy, make me feel better, and as I go home and go eat dinner and watch some TV and go to bed. But outreach is to really reach out and talk and hear and listen and lament with and cry with the people that we're serving. That's service. And so while we have all these wonderful categories of outreach, what do we really do with it? And how many of us can look back on most of our outreaches? And again, I'm generalizing. I realize that because there are wonderful stories of these kinds of outreaches that we do. But how many times do we have the stories that say the outreach really changed and impacted our community or that individual? Sometimes we'll never know. I get that. But we should know if we're doing outreach really in the way we should be doing outreach. Any other major ideas? Okay. What's that?
We do grief share.
Good. Yeah, that's a type of outreach that isn't handing something, but really walking with people and lamenting. And lament is such a powerful thing. I'm going to keep moving. I'm a preacher, so I could go, you know. That's the hard part. So holistic outreach ministry is really the category that we focus on in Cactus. Holistic, meaning trying to do for or walk with and be there for the people in every way that they need. And that sounds really big in every way, but it is exactly true. So Nazarene Compassionate Ministries, you've probably heard of different compassionate ministries. You've probably heard of Shepherd. You've probably heard of the Native American School in Arizona. Now you've heard of Cactus Nazarene Ministries, maybe for the first time, maybe you've heard of it before. We have NCM around the world, and we have compassionate ministries all around the world. And many of you are involved in that. Some of you have done Work and Witness, and you've worked with NCM in all of those Work and Witness. It's huge, and that's a huge way of doing holistic ministry. NCM is focused very much on trying to be holistic in its ministry, in its outreach. So it's not just the doing for, but walking with people. They partner with local congregations, your churches, supporting them in their efforts to serve others. It creates change in the communities, and that's huge. We have to know that. And points people toward the love of God through Christ. That's a holistic ministry. That's the kind of outreach that we need to be doing as the church. It's time to really refocus our outreach. Ask those questions, and Denise is going to talk more about that as we go. I wanted to read you this quote from a really good friend of mine, Professor Peterson up at NNU, and I think it really describes everything, and then I'm going to move on. We want to show you a quick video, and then Denise is going to take over, and you get to the meat of all of this and the exciting stuff. But Christian communal worship, the idea of going to church, right, is the glorification of God and the sanctification of humanity as a divine human event where God offers transformation and healing to help people become more fully what God created them to be and, look at this, do. God breathes. He inhales and gathers in individuals. We become the church. Individual Christians to heal, transform, and renew, to refocus them as the body of Christ. And then He breathes or exhales us out to continue the ministry of the incarnation, which we saw in Mark was to serve. That participates in the kingdom of God more fully coming. The consummation of the kingdom will come and God will be all in all. God will be glorified. I love this quote. For outreach, for compassionate ministries, for being the church. This is who we are. God breathed from the very dust of the earth first. God breathes. And then He inhales us in. It's a beautiful picture. To heal us, to grow us, to help us. Just to exhale us out so that we can do the same for the world. To be His hands and feet, as Teresa Avila tells us. I love the connection to all of that. So I'm not going to ask you this, but what holistic ministry are you doing? What holistic ministry might you consider doing? How would you take the idea of this being inhaled and exhaled and serving and being the hands and feet of Jesus back to your church to just do what you need to do? I'm just going to leave that question with you. Let you think through it as we continue on. I'm not sure how this video, if it will work just starting or if I hit the button, but let me do that. Yes. Do we have sound? I don't know if we have sound. I don't have sound for you though, so
I'm the executive director of Cactus.
One of the greatest privileges of serving here in Cactus, Texas at the center is serving the different cultures from all around the world that live in this little town. And we have the privilege of finding out what their need is and seeing if we can help them in that need. We do that through a lot of programs that are set up specifically, but also as they come in with each different need, see if there's something we can help. Some of the programs that are consistent are English as a second language. We teach it ourselves so that people can learn English and they need to move on from practice. They can move on from practice and they can really have that opportunity. A GED program we just started last year, and what an opportunity that is for people to pick up their high school diploma and go on to college. Many of them have said they would like to get at least an associate's degree, and so that's exciting for us to see people accomplish that and move forward in their life. We have the after-school program over at the elementary school called BLAST, and it is a blast, literally, as we teach the kids English there as well, and we mentor them in their homework, and we continue their literacy, working with them to make sure that they excel in grade school as they move on into different grades. We continue BLAST during the summer, where they're not in school, and so literacy and English is really important for these kids to keep up. It's a great ministry, not only to the kids, but because we minister to the children, then also their families as well. One of the areas that many people struggle with as they come is that they have to keep their visas up to date, or their green cards up to date, or their seeking citizenship. Our immigration services, which are Department of Justice accredited and recognized here at Cactus, help them to be able to do what they need to do and to become permanent residents or even citizens of the United States. And it is so exciting to watch them go through their interviews and be granted citizenship. There are so many things that we do, just little programs here and there all year long. We bundle up Cactus and bring coats to those who come from warm climates and don't have a coat to be able to handle the cold weather here in the Panhandle. Or partner with Salvation Army and Angel Tree and partner with Snack Pack for Kids and other things to help supply the needs here in town. And it's a privilege and honor to do that with so many partners and with so many people who donate finances or other resources to Cactus Country Ministries. And so with that, I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you for your donations, thank you for your resources, thank you for your prayers, for your support, for your love for the people of Cactus and for the staff at Cactus Nazarene Ministry Center. We really couldn't do it without you. You are a big part of who we are, and we deeply appreciate it.
It's over here.
Oh.
Oh.
I think I'm going the wrong way. Sorry. Okay, I got it now. Good afternoon. As Phil said, I'm Denise, and so Phil kind of talked about the why. Why do we even do this? Why are we even here? Why do we talk about this? And I'm going to talk a little bit about the how. But I first want to give we're not experts in this by any means, but we have had a good bit of experience both in the U.S. and in countries where we served to help with compassionate ministry centers. We pastored a church in South Africa where there was a very big compassionate ministry center that wasn't necessarily done right to begin with. And we were involved in a lot of compassionate ministries projects in Pennsylvania where we were lay leaders. And we helped a whole community come together and do an integrated compassionate ministry center. I'm a social worker. I'm a social work professor. And so some of what I'll share with you is stuff that I teach students. But I think hopefully it's just good practical information about if I feel called to start a compassionate ministry center, where do I start? So one of the things, so we're going to kind of talk about best practices. One of the things that is really important when we think about if you haven't started, even if you have started, it's a good idea to say, are we doing this well? And if you haven't started yet, it's important to understand the needs of the community, right? Let me just say this, and I'm going to say this with all of the love and kindness that I can muster. Don't do a ministry because you want to do it. Don't do a ministry because you think, oh, I just love that. Do a ministry because people need it and because it helps them. We've seen too often people starting things because it's something that I've always wanted to do. Great. Then find a place where it needs to be done if that's not your town. In Illinois, one of our stopping points, the Lord has just really taken us to a lot of different places, but we were in Illinois and there was a church that somebody moved there and they said, I love to start food pantries and I need to do that here. I've done it other places and I'm going to do it here. And we just kind of, you know, we were like, how do we say, you know, there are 4 food pantries here. This is not a food desert. There was a food pantry open every single day of the week and there was not a coordinated effort. That's not helpful, right? So really reevaluate the needs of the community or evaluate if you haven't already started. And then a question is what you were thinking of doing what the community actually needs? Or is it just something that you are thinking, and are other people doing it? I think the Lord delights when we join other denominations, when we join other churches, when we gather people and we do something together. I promise you, I know that the Lord delights in it, but I also promise you the non-Christian community looks at us and they go, wow, they actually do work together, right? That's attractive. When we're working and being the hands and feet of Jesus in our communities, especially when we do it in a collaborative way, it's smart because it allows us to utilize our resources better. But I feel like I know that it brings the Lord joy and it's really attractive to the community. I know I'm going to do this the wrong way again. Okay, I kept thinking, which am I pushing the up or down? So the other thing that's important to do is to make sure that whatever you're thinking or feeling like needs to happen because you've maybe talked to people in the community. Let me actually just back up and say, if you don't know, you might be saying, and how do I know what my community needs? I would say ask people, right? Ask leaders in your community. Ask the social workers in your community. I guarantee they know, because they're the ones who are helping the people. If we're talking about starting a holistic, compassionate ministry center, or a food pantry, or a grief group, if there are 20 grief groups, then join that one, right? If you're the only one, please start it. So, but you can ask around, what is going on? Look, I could say, I almost said, look in the phone book. That ages me slightly. Look online, look to see what is available and what's already being done, and then move from there. And then it's really important to determine the capabilities of your congregation, right? If you have 10 people in your church, you might not want to start a big project, right? That might not be realistic. You know, they say 10% of the church does all of the, or like 80% of the work or something, whatever. I know it's some statistic like that, but make sure that you are working within the capabilities, but also know the strengths and limitations of your congregation, right? If you have a congregation of nurses, I'm just making something up, you know, you might want to do some kind of invite people in to talk, to get their blood pressure or to have a diabetes clinic or do something like that, right? It's important to really, really look at what is it that you have and that what can you do. We do that all the time in Cactus. We're constantly saying, what does the community need? During the pandemic, when so much was shut down and we were like, had only been there 9 months, and we're like, great, we just moved to a place far away from our kids and everything is shut down. Now what do we do? And we actually took the opportunity to go into the community. We had some volunteers who were committed to coming. They still came. And so we did a community needs assessment from 6 feet away. We went and knocked on doors, backed up, and asked people questions with masks on. But we really tried to use that time, like, we don't have many people here, so let's make sure that we're really meeting the needs of this community. But then we have to look at, it wasn't our congregation, it was our staff and who we had on staff. So what are the strengths and limitations that we had? We didn't have many people to help us. We were in a situation where we knew immigration services were desperately needed. We had had someone who was doing it not in a good way. Unfortunately, she left. And so we're all standing there going, how do we do this? How do we help someone, you know, help a community? And so I was like, well, I guess I'll get trained. I'm not a lawyer and never thought about being one, but I'm passionate about helping people. But then we found someone who was accredited with the Department of Justice, who was willing to help us from a distance so that we could kind of, as a stopgap. So what are the strengths and limits? What are the giftings? And what are the struggles? And one of the things that can be really beneficial is to look at the past, not to boohoo, but look at the past to see what has been done well and what have been the challenges. But use that as a learning point, or, you know, as a place like, okay, now we know what we've done well and what we haven't, and where we might go from here. So it's just something that we can continually do. And again, I think we do this maybe too often. I think we ask the question, how are we doing? What are we doing well at Cactus? And who do we have and who do we need so that we can keep moving forward? So also involve the congregation and other leaders. If you are the pastor or if you're the person who wants to start something, don't just you know, go running ahead and don't tell anybody what you're doing, but involve everyone, get their feedback, get people's input, but also ask other people who know your congregation well. Get some feedback from the community. Also evaluate the emotional, the spiritual, the social, the physical health of your congregation so that, are we ready for this? One of the things that we've seen in Cactus is it's a very spiritually dark place. It's people from a lot of different cultures, from a lot of different religions who bring their gods. And I'm being very, very literal. They bring their gods, and so we're often in a place of spiritual warfare in Cactus. It's something that we talk about with people before they come to help us. When volunteers come for the summer, we let them know, don't let your spiritual guard down. And it's something that we just talk about because we've seen it and we know it. So it's really important to not tax your people even more by adding a ministry that at the end of the day, if you start doing something and you can't keep doing it, you've actually hurt people more than if you never started it, right? So doing your homework up front is really important. Doing less well, I think this is like duh, but doing less well is better than doing a lot poorly, especially if it's at the expense of your people, right? And starting small is really, really good. I was looking at, I'm writing a grant for Cactus. I write the grants for Cactus, and I was writing one for the United Way, and I was looking at our budget and how it has increased over the years. And it's kind of scary because Phil's the main fundraiser and I'm the main grant writer. And I was like, whoa. But I realized just how small it really started, but how the Lord has just been opening doors and showing us needs and sending us people who have a heart to serve in that way and who have the ability, the heart, and the spiritual prowess, the spiritual preparedness to be there as well. So some more best practices, make sure the ministry is empowering and equipping, and be cautious of creating dependencies. This is a hard one because it can be really difficult to know, am I enabling a person to stay in their situation by what we're doing? Am I disempowering somebody by giving them something that they could do themselves? Or am I really helping them to get to a better place where in a year they could be the helper here? Right? That's really the goal. Like what we have said so many times is we want to have the employees at Cactus to be followers of Jesus Christ who are from Cactus. Because guess what isn't sustainable? For people to live in Cactus. Like, we're not from there. We're not staying there. And, you know, we're staying there as long as the Lord tells us. But our kids and their kids are not anywhere near. And so that's not our home. But there are people who are from there and who probably will stay there. But we just need them to be Jesus followers. We need them to be prepared and trained, and then they can take over the ministry. And so we're working on that slowly, but if we just come in, and what Phil was kind of talking about with the food, boy, we struggle with that sometimes. Just handing out food, are we helping them? Are they gonna need more food next week, and the next week, and the next week, and the next week? What are we doing to help them to be the ones handing out the food, right? What are we doing to empower them, to remove the barriers, to get them over whatever the hurdle is? Is it budgeting classes? Is it getting a better job? Is it an education? It depends, right? But if we just keep handing or counseling in a I'll tell you what to do. So as a social worker, I did professional counseling, and I remember people at times coming to me and saying, why don't you tell me what to do? If I tell you what to do, how's that going to help you decide what to do when I'm not around? It's not me who tells you what to do, but let me help you through the process of this decision. And so compassionate ministries really should be that as well. And so if we're creating dependencies, then you better stick around and keep doing it, and you better never go away, because that person then is in bad shape. If you start giving them, and they start getting used to just being this way, and then you leave, and then they're like, now what, right? So we have to take them beyond that. Okay, and then the other part is making sure it's sustainable. Right? Because if it's not sustainable, then it's not going to continue. And we can look at sustainability in a number of ways. Do you have the right people doing it? Do you have, you know, what are all of the pieces? Is it even needed? But the other part is, financially, do you have the money? So some ways to make sure that the ministry is sustainable is having a clear mission, knowing what you're doing, vision, where you're going, making sure that you have a budget and that you have funding and that you're going to be able to continue to do that. Do you have the staff and the volunteers lined up? And then also be prepared, because, well, like I said earlier, it's worse for the community if you start something and can't continue. And I'm going to give you an example. So Cactus Nazarene Ministry Center started in 2016-ish, 13, 16, not sure. 16, they became a 501c3. In 2019, formally, they started a branch off of that called the Well Health Center that is a medical clinic. We need a doctor, by the way, so if you know of anybody, send them. But one of the issues with the Well Medical Clinic is that it wasn't sustainable from the beginning, okay? A doctor who had been a missionary doctor, a Nazarene missionary doctor, felt called to start a clinic. It was very much needed, but there was no planning or preparation for how to pay someone who might actually want paid, right? She was willing to come and not get paid. She burned out within 3 years, and she had to leave for her own sanity. But now we don't have a doctor in that clinic. And now we have a community who we said, please come, we're here. We've got a doctor who wants to take care of you. She was wonderful to them, they loved her. But then she had to leave and we have no one. And now we have this semi-empty clinic who we get a doctor three days out of a month now to come and just pinch hit for some, you know, emergent situations. It wasn't a good plan. There wasn't a lot of, thinking through and the sustainability of it. It was like, yay, this is great. She wants to come. Wow, let's do it. Great building, great place, all those things. But the finances of it just weren't really prepared. So in some ways, it's worse now that we don't have it than if we never had, because they wouldn't have expected it and they wouldn't have gotten out of the habit of having to go to the next town. So the other thing then, if you have the ministry, then making sure that it's effective, right? We can have lots of money to support it. We can have lots of things. We can have all the right people. But then it's a good idea if you're in the middle of it to say, is this doing what we intended, right? So you go back to your mission and you look at what were we hoping that this would do. And ideally, hopefully, if you're whatever you're doing, you're collecting data of some point, of some kind, like how many people are we serving? And so you might know that, like, And you might see that we have this food pantry. Every year we get more people. That's really good. That's really good. But if your plan from the beginning was to help those people to become independent and able to care for themselves, have you done that? So if that was your goal, then you need to circle back at some point, not necessarily in the first 30 days, but maybe in a year. It's always good to say, are we doing what we intended on? Or if we're wanting to lead people to Jesus, are there people being led to Jesus by your ministry? Or if you're thinking, gosh, this is going to grow our church, I mean, that's a great reason to do a compassionate ministry. Have you grown your church? And if you have, glory be to God. Then you've collected some data and you know this is effective. I mean, I'm not talking about effectiveness in the government's eyes or in some big scale project. Is it what you were expecting it to do? Is it doing that? And it's really important to find that out as you're going, and then be able to come back again, circle back around, and do we have to make changes to this? Again, with the food that we hand out, initially it was just handing out food, and then we said we need to know who these people even are. We don't even know who they are, in a way, and so we started to collect information from them so we would know them and ask them, what else do you need? Can we pray with you? And so just in an effort to expand a little bit from just handing out food boxes, but to engage them and to develop a relationship. And that has actually increased the number of people who come to the center for other things. Right? So in that way, there has been some effectiveness. But whatever it is that you're doing, it's always good to come back and ask the question, is this working? And how well is it working? And what could we do differently to make it work even better? Are we meeting whatever that said need was? And with some of this, if you have like, okay, I see you talking about collecting data, what does that even mean? I'm not gonna go into detail with that, but if you would want to ask, we certainly have done that and we can give you more information on that, like what that might look like. If you wanna email us, we could even give you some specific ideas of how to collect data. We could even actually come and talk to you at your church about doing that or whatever would be helpful. And with that, and I'm going to eventually learn to point this forward. So what are some of the benefits? What we hope, I think probably most people are hoping that there would be church growth, both deep and wide, right? Both inside the church and just bringing more people in, but also deepening the walk of those who are already in the church, right? Because when we are loving people, when we are being more like Jesus, we are more attractive to the world, not just when we're collaborating with others, but when people can look in and say, they got something going on in there. Man, that is some good stuff. You know what? They love all those people who come in. Those homeless people who come into their church, they don't ask them to change their clothes. They just love on them. Those people who come in who, you know, maybe brown and black people, they just love on them. Or the LGBTQ community, they just love on them. Whoever it is that you're serving, right? When we love on people, that people want to be part of us, right? Even if they're not followers of Christ, they want to be part of us because that's attractive. But it also, as we serve, we have to draw closer to the Lord, right? And so it deepens each heart, the walk of each person's heart as they're going. And finally, and then it also fulfills the Great Commission, right? Matthew 28 tells us to go out into the world and make disciples. But that, it can be in the nations, but it can be in our backyard. It can be in the community around us. It might be, for Phil and I, it was first to Thailand, and then it was to the Dominican Republic, and then it was to South Africa, and then it was to the far nation of Texas in Cactus. But whatever that community looks like, clearly our command from the Lord is to go. And so it fulfills the commission. Does anyone have any questions or comments in our last 7 minutes?
Any thoughts?
Thoughts, questions, or comments, yeah.
About how many people a day pass through your center? Different kinds of assistance?
That is a really good question. Depending on the day. So in a year, it's thousands. Probably 2,000 a year. I mean, so one of the things we do is we give out coats for people who come from warm climates, and I think about 1,000 were given last year. So that's a big portion of it, right? And then,
yeah, food services between that, a couple of thousand. So I would say for services on a regular basis, 5 to 10 people a day. But ESL classes increase that, so that's actually probably more like 45.
Yeah.
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 So it just depends. They come for, they have to set up appointments for immigration because it can't, it's really hard when you just do a walk-in because they have to have so many things with them. So they'll come and do a consultation maybe, but then they got to come back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, keeping track of how many people come two or three or four times depending on what they're doing is the hard part. Mm-hmm. I would say with the classes and all of that, easily 45 to 50 people mm-hmm. a day coming through just the center, and that doesn't count all the things we do out in the community, mm-hmm. like our BLAST program or
yeah, the
Wheels on Wheels
yeah.
or things like that.
How many do you have on staff?
7 paid staff and 2 full-time volunteers.
Volunteers now?
Oh yeah, we actually have more volunteers because some of our students have become volunteers. Some of our ESL students have become volunteers. Yeah.
2, and this year now 2 Trevecca interns for the summer, so pretty mm-hmm. good staff. It's mm-hmm. growing faster than we can keep up with.
Yeah. And it started when we went there, there were no paid staff, no one full-time paid, not even Phil.
There were 2 people on staff.
Yeah. Yeah, the Lord has really grown and provided. And it's a very diverse staff from South Africa, from the Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico.
Mexico.
Yeah. Both, the other 2 girls are from Mexico, yeah. You had a question for me? Yeah.
I'll probably ask you a question. It'll take too long to answer, but we live, we're in the St. Louis area. Mm. And in our area, there's a heavy Hispanic population, which I'm sure a lot of areas are like that. But how could we determine if English as a second language would be a good ministry for us to try to?
Yeah.
One of the ways that we've determined that ESL, if you want to shorten that up, is necessary is because it helps them move into positions in the work that they would not get if they can't speak English. And so depending on why the Latino community is there, there's generally a reason why they've come. If it's a type of work, if it's where their family came to, if it's whatever. But in order for people to get supervisory jobs or things like that, even in the meatpacking plant, which is divided up by cultures and languages, that it's an amazing place you go into, and this is the Chinese table, and this is the Thai table, and this is the Burmese table, so they can talk to each other. But to be a supervisor, you need to speak English, because then you work with the uppers. And so English as a second language has been helped develop them educationally. They can move on and get high school diplomas, They can go to college. So we've had people that said, I need to learn English because I want to go get an associate's degree in agribusiness or whatever. And so I think asking and saying, you know, figuring out if they're in the community, if there's a large community of people who don't speak English, why are they there and would English help them to advance? And so it's really an educational tool. In Texas where we are, in the reality, they wouldn't have to speak English if they wanted to stay where they are. You can stay there for 40 years and never speak a word of English and speak Spanish your entire life. Everybody speaks Spanish, whether you're Hispanic or not. And so it helps them, though, to advance, and that's been a big thing. Or to even leave that community and find work elsewhere in a larger city or in a place where there are less Spanish-speaking people or French-speaking or Arabic-speaking or whatever language it is that we're working with.
And I would say, too, to find out, are other people doing it? Like, are there 10 churches in the area who are using ESL as a ministry? If there are not, then I would say try it, right? Yeah.
Okay. That's good, right?
Yeah. Any other? We only have about a minute.
So you've been talking about specifically Cactus Nazarene Ministries. Is there other ministries that a person can get involved in that you know of?
Like in the U.S. or?
Yeah, there are. There are a lot of compassion ministries in the U.S. and Canada. Shepherd
Community.
Community is a big one that's in Indianapolis. The Native American school in Arizona is a big one.
What's it called?
There's Cactus. There's a bunch. The way to do it is to really get on the.
Does anybody know the one in Appalachia? It's in. There's a newer one in Appalachia that's a ministry to the Appalachian community.
Can't think of the name of it. Ministry. So the best thing to do if you're looking. To be involved is to get on the regional website, the U.S. and Canada website. Generally, all the compassion ministries are listed.
And or look at districts. Go to each district website and then look. Or there might be positions listed on the Nazarene Job Board. Like anytime we've had a position, we've listed it on the Nazarene Job Board. That can give you an idea.
And the idea behind outreach, and I think we'll quit with this, is that you don't have to just do Nazarene, right? We can cross the denominational lines, and there are some churches that are doing wonderful ministry out there that it would be awesome to get involved with and to be part of what they're doing, because it's still based on the foundations of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's kind of really the important part of doing outreach, is it doesn't have to just be the Church of the Nazarene. Of course, that would be our first choice if we can do that as Nazarenes. And it is who we are. It's our DNA. Mm-hmm. It started with Phineas Brzee in the middle of Los Angeles, reaching out to the down and out, the drug addicts and the alcoholics and the homeless. Right? That's who we are as the Church of the Nazarene. And then spreading to all of the world. We really take that scripture to heart. But does it have to be? If it's not the Nazarene Church, for instance, Cactus is not surrounded by the Nazarene Mecca. We don't have Nazarene churches around us, so we're kind of isolated in that way. So do we work with other organizations and congregations and denominations? Yes. Do I raise funds outside of the Church of the Nazarene? Absolutely. We want to share the love, because there's more than enough need in this world to go around. And so it doesn't have to be. But I understand the question. But I think we need to look where God's already doing something. And if we can't make it happen over here, let's join it over here and do what he's already doing. That's a hugely important aspect of outreach for us. Appreciate you giving us the time today.
Thank you so much.